Welcome back to the show, Jeff, Kevin, and Mike, Tech Radio. This week, in-game sponsor is WizardNet. I don't know what else to say about WizardNet, but...
Very good. Now, coming up, it's time to talk to...
Ken
from Irrational Games. He's co-developing... Well, his company's co-developing System Shock 2 with Looking Glass Studios. Are you there, Ken? He's on line six. Thank you. Hello, Ken.
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good. How you doing, man?
Good.
I want to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of some of the games that you guys have put out in the past, and I want to know the correlation between Irrational Studios and Looking Glass. Can you fill that gap in for me and the listeners real quick?
Sure. Irrational Games started in 1997 by myself and two partners, all of us, of course, Looking Glass alumni.
Okay.
We left Looking Glass, spun off, and were shortly contacted again by our former employers saying, hey, we like you guys. We don't want to lose you. Why don't you come back and you know, do a game on the Thief engine.
Now, right.
I was one of the initial designers on Thief.
Right.
My partners had both worked on the project, so we were clearly a strong choice for that.
Great right. game, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed that because it kind of pushed the first-person genre in a very different direction. I was happy to see that occur because, you know, there again, it's kind of like Half-Life kind of pushed the story, and you guys took Thief and, you know, made the game a little more... I don't know, just a little more interactive with what you could do.
We looked out at the first-person market, and we didn't really want to go into the straight shooter field. And we spent a lot of time, I mean, there's a long development time in that project, 3 years. We spent a lot of time just thinking about the design early on, almost a year, in fact.
Right.
Because, you know, it takes time, I think, to do something sort of different.
Right.
I was very happy to see how Thief turned out.
Now going back a little ways, I know Looking Glass developed Ultima Underworld 2. Did Looking Glass have anything to do with Ultima Underworld 1?
Yeah, it's the same.
I figured as much. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, because, you know, as far as doing something different, I mean, there is a milestone in computer gaming as far as something different, and that's probably the first time that I discovered Looking Glass was not only with Ultima Underworld 1, of course, 2, and then probably one of my favorite games of all time, System Shock. Amazing products. I mean, that totally changed the market.
Yeah, there's a guy at Looking Glass named Doug Church who was sort of one of the main moving factors behind all of those titles. And I was fortunate enough when I first got in the gaming industry to sort of be taken under Doug's wing and spend a lot of time with him. And he was a great influence on me. And he and I were the initial guys working on Thief, and that was a really thrilling experience for me.
Right.
He was the guy who started on Underworld and then System Shock and Underworld 2. He's one of the really premier minds in the gaming industry, and you don't hear that much about him, which is kind of surprising with that kind of pedigree.
Yes. Totally. It's interesting because I remember when System Shock was first released, I completely fell in love with the game, and it seemed like the rest of the industry didn't even know that it existed for some reason. You know, I don't want to say that it didn't know it existed. I mean, it got great press, and you'd read about it, but it didn't seem to be the most popular game around. And it's like not until quite a while after that game was designed, released, and that it got some of the acclaim that it deserved.
Yep.
I mean, was that a big shock to everyone on the team? I mean,
so to speak. I think what happens sometimes with Looking Glass Games is generally, and I think you'll probably agree with me on this, Looking Glass Games and now Irrational Games tend to be a little bit ahead of their time.
Yeah.
And I think Underworld, I remember the first time I played Underworld, I looked at it and it took me a while for my mind to get around the kind of freedom and the kind of interactions you could have in that product.
Because right.
you think back to that time, there was nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing remotely, and Shock took it to the next level. Thief kind of took a little left turn on it and sort of did a different thing. And I think now when you play Shock 2, there's so much interaction in the world. We give so many tools to the player and let the player experiment so much. It's kind of overwhelming at first. You're not used to that kind of freedom. Games are usually fairly linear, and there's usually, you know, one or two approaches to a certain problem.
Right.
Looking Glass Games and now Irrational Games makes games that like allow the player the tools to approach problems in sort of the way they want to approach it.
Yeah, I'm completely excited about System Shock 2, and I'll get to talking to you about that in just a second. But I
since that's what the interview is about.
Oh no! I completely understand. I actually can't wait for that product. I mean, you guys also do the Flight Unlimited products as well, correct?
Looking Glass does. Not
yeah. Irrational. Okay. Not Irrational Games. That's right, because you guys have spun off of it.
You have to pardon Mike. He's having a moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
he gets like this sometimes. He likes to wander afar.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the history, and, you know,
I first came to Looking Glass, I was thrilled to come because I, too, was a huge fan of their products when I came, and I totally bought into their design philosophy.
Right.
And I learned an incredible amount there, and they're a great company.
Yeah, interestingly enough, is System Shock 2 going to include the dynamic type interface that, as far as I'm concerned, System Shock pioneered? You know, like finding things along the way and having the actual interface of the game dynamically adjust to match that. Is that same kind of process going to be built into System Shock 2?
The interface, it's interesting you bring up the interface for Shock 2, because you asked me the question before of why didn't Shock 2 find the kind of audience that a Quake game found or a Half-Life type game found.
Right.
And I think a lot of that had to do, there was sort of a barrier of entry in the form of the interface.
Right.
It had an extremely complex interface, and the reason wasn't because they just wanted to make a complex interface. The player was allowed to do so much more than the players are allowed to do in other games.
Right, like I remember the controls of the eyes and the head and leaning around corners and those kind of things. I mean, that was...
Lean and kneel and lean around corners and install all these implants, and there's so much you could do.
I loved it.
Play all your logs. You know, and we had a very similar problem in Shock 2. I think a lot of people had been worried about System Shock 2 in the sense that they were worried that we would try to dumb it down in any way.
Right.
And in fact, System Shock 2 is a more complex, a deeper game than Shock 1.
Excellent.
System Shock 2 has sort of reached back into the world, the Underworld style design, and it is truly an RPG in the way that Underworld was an RPG.
Wow.
So to describe the product in simple terms, imagine sort of the world and the vibe of System Shock 2 in an enhanced version of the Thief Engine, a radically enhanced version of the Thief Engine, with the Underworld, with the RPG elements of Underworld brought back in. We have a real full inventory and stats and character development.
Any skill based?
Yep.
Oh wow.
Tons of that kind of stuff. A player has technical skills. He can hack computers. He can hack into security systems. He can modify his weapons to different modification states. He can maintain his weapons and repair them when they break.
That sounds great.
And there are 35 different psionic powers the player can achieve.
Wow. And I'm assuming the mood and the environment of the first one is probably going to at least attempt to be recreated, because that's the immersion factor. I mean, to be honest with you, System Shock was one of the first games that had a very immersive feeling for me. Mm-hmm. Back in those times, you know, I mean, I can't say I thoroughly didn't enjoy a product like Ultima 4 or something, and that wasn't an immersive experience, but it didn't create the immersion of, like, I'm there kind of immersion, and System Shock was the first to do that. And and I got to tinker with System Shock 2 a little bit at E3. Unfortunately, I didn't get to play with it too much, but it looked great. I'm very excited about it. What are the weapons in...
Can you go a little bit into what the story behind the game is?
I can tell you somewhat about the story. The story takes place... It takes place 42 years after Shock 1, and Shodan's been out of the picture for a while, and as he defeated her in the first game. Shodan's the villain in the game.
Right.
And there's the corporation that created the evil computer from the first game has sort of been pushed under because they created the evil computer.
Right.
But now, 42 years later, they've developed the first faster-than-light drive in history.
Hmm.
And so they're taking this maiden journey on the ship, the Von Braun, with this faster-than-light drive. Now, of course... You're a soldier on board that ship, and everything sort of goes wrong.
Right.
And you wake up in a very similar circumstances as the first game. You've just come out of cryogenic sleep. You've had cybernetic implants put in your head. And most of the people on the ship have been killed. And you have to figure out what's going on.
Oops.
Yeah, so the story is going to unfold, I'm assuming. We're leaving you in the beginning of the game in kind of a dark state, and you need to...
Yes, just like the first game.
Perfect.
And I think the fans of the first game will sort of be lulled into the familiarity of the story the game starts off in a similar fashion to the first game, and then we start twisting the knife on people.
Right.
And the story goes off in a really surprising direction.
Cool.
Yeah, that sounds... Is there any plans for any type of multiplayer in any way? I don't think so, but I'm just wondering if that's something that you guys are considering.
Four-player cooperative multiplayer.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, cooperative is what I wanted to hear.
Yes, that's what I've...
So in other words, am I correct in assuming that four players could play the game as the game one player would see the perspective from, as if four people woke up on the ship?
Yes. Perfect. And the coolest thing about it is it really is an RPG, and because you can develop your character along these different stats, you'd be a more weapons-oriented guy or a more sonics-oriented guy or a more tech-oriented guy. You can have this cool combinatorial effect of different people in the party with different skills working together. You know, the hacker runs ahead and tries to hack into the security system, and the weapons guy's covering him
yeah, that's
with his weapons.
That sounds good.
You know, the psi guy's casting spell, he's casting psi powers to defend send them both. You know,
right.
It's very, very cool.
Well, what's going to happen with the cyberspace that was created in the first one? Is that still going to be reproduced some way in this one? Are you still going to be able to go into the quote unquote the net and kind of fly around in some sort of environment?
The training sequence at the beginning all takes place in cyberspace, and there is a cyberspace sequence. The last level actually takes place in cyberspace, and I can't tell you that much about that.
Oh, no problem.
But instead of sort of going for the more systemic cyberspace sequences that occurred numerous times in the first game, some people weren't that thrilled with those sequences.
Right.
We decided to really focus the cyberspace experience on a few choice, like, full-out cyberspace sequences that are going to be beautiful, like nothing anybody's ever seen before.
Cool.
Sounds very good. I'm very excited. Okay, weapons. I want to talk a little bit about that. Is there going to be a whole gambit of weapons from, like, pistols, crowbar, you know, some sort of a melee weapon to lasers and all kinds of crazy things? Sounds like we just lost them.
I think they're going to be killer cell phones in the game.
If you like.
Right. Killer cell phones.
Well, I guess Brooke can try to get them back on the phone and we can finish up.
But in the meantime... That sounds like an excellent game.
Oh, it's going to be good. I had no idea they're going
to be cooperative. That right there sold me on it.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see...
I want a cooperative game so bad.
Yeah, well, a cooperative game... Okay, Baldur's Gate was cooperative, but...
But poorly.
Yeah, I'm not real...
Poorly implemented.
Yeah, I think it's going
to
be...
Plus the fact... You know what annoys me about Baldur's Gate and that? Every single person has to have their own copy.
Right. That is kind of...
That's stupid.
Yeah.
That means if you have a party of six people, that's $300 with the software.
Right. Well, I mean, you could always buy a few blank discs.
Yeah.
But we don't really advocate that kind of behavior.
Right. But I'm saying that the intention, the design, was that each of those people had to have their own.
Yeah, that's one thing. I've been playing a lot of Heroes 3, Heroes of Might and Magic 3. And, you know, you have one disc, and boom, you can play.
We got him back.
All right, what line is he on?
Six. Hey, Ken, you there?
Hey there.
All right.
Welcome back.
Looks like Shodan didn't want us to speak today.
Yeah, took us off. All right, you were beginning to talk about weapons, if you can continue on that thought line there of what kind of weapons are going to be in the game.
Yeah, not only do we have 14 different weapons, you know, from sort of the more mundane, like pistols and assault rifles and games you see, and weapons you see in most type of games, to more exotic weapons like stasis field generators that lock people in place for a period of time, and EMP rifles, which are only effective against electromagnetic pulse weapons, which are only effective against, like, robots and androids.
Yeah, because, of course, Shock 1 had lots of mechanical enemies running around.
Right, and you have to use the right... And sort of the vibe of Shock is you have to use the right weapon against the right target.
Right.
Not only that, we have different types, up to five different types of ammunition for each weapon, which are differently effective against different targets. And you can modify your weapons so they can hold more ammo, so they can have a faster recharge rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's cool.
On top of that, we also have alien weapons you can find aboard the ship that you need to research before you use them.
So you have to figure out how to use it, some other technologies that you might run across.
That's right. Things like the viral proliferator, which is this alien weapon that's all organic. And the ammunition are these worms that you infect with a different type of virus depending on the different type of target you want to hurt. So lots of cool stuff like that.
Now, when do you suppose Shock 2 is going to possibly be released to the public? Is it still in development stages, or is it in like final stages? What's happening?
We're getting towards the final stages of development right now. Okay. The game is playing great, looking great. It will be out late this summer.
Cool.
Very cool.
Because I'm anxiously awaiting it.
I'm hyped to buy it.
Well, it's the cooperative stuff that you don't see too often. And we were just talking when we had lost you there for a second about games like Baldur's Gate offering, you know, a cooperative role-playing experience. But it didn't do it very well. And
The difference between Baldur's Gate, I think what I found, I love Baldur's Gate, but I think the disappointing aspect of the multiplayer was that it was sort of a lesser game as multiplayer because you got to play fewer characters.
Yeah, and...
I
didn't also like the aspect of the main story person of the game. And, you know, if you lost that one main character, all the rest of them were then...
All over.
I didn't really get into that. But it's the first-person cooperative. I mean, we've seen cooperative play in, you know, in some of the Doom and the, you know, I think it was Doom. I can't remember which one had the cooperative ones now. But does Half-Life have cooperative play?
No.
I don't know.
It does not. But nonetheless, it sounds very good. I'm quite excited to see it, so we will definitely have to touch base with you down the road as soon as the product gets ready to release, so we can get in here and check it out.
I have one last question. Is the music in-house, or did you contract out?
In-house. We have an amazing, as you can tell from most Looking Glass games, we have an amazing sound department. And the same guys who did the sound for Thief are doing our sound for System Shock 2.
Excellent.
You know, that was one of the Looking Glass's major contributions to the product. They handled the AV aspects of the game.
Cool.
Just like always, they did a bang-up job.
Right.
Excellent.
What do you think about the development that video game music is now eligible to receive Grammys?
Well, I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't be. And I think as games get more sophisticated, obviously you're going to find more sophisticated music. It's a little different because you never, you know, the game and the music in a lot of games is dynamic. So you're never really sure when it's going to hit.
Right.
Like
right.
In the movies. So it's a much harder job, and I think those guys need to be rewarded.
That's true, because the music is, you know, you run into an action scene, it kind of dynamically creates the action of the music.
Yep.
You know, and it's got to be quite difficult to put that together, and so it seamlessly transitions and actually sounds good together. And
it's a real challenge.
Oh, I can imagine.
The whole sound system for System Shock 2, actually, the whole ambient sound system, you remember from Thief, you know, all the ambient sounds.
And right, right.
Positional, we have 3D audio and positional sound. It's really amazing. You really feel like you're on that spaceship. There's an incredible environment generated. We have great tools in that engine to do that. We can put down ambient beds wherever we want. The monsters, similar to the way in Thief, will broadcast sort of their awareness of the player through the sounds, through what they say. Similar to in Thief. You know, it's not as direct as in Thief where somebody says, hey, who goes there? Because our enemies generally aren't human. They're more robots or aliens, something like that.
Is the engine going to support environmental audio extensions by any chance?
Yeah, we're supporting EAX.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So you set that those four speakers up. It sounds amazing.
Oh, I can imagine.
It's so creepy. I was playing it the other night. I got that set up here, and I just got so creeped out, I had to stop playing it.
I love that, man.
Yeah,
that is so cool.
I love pushing everything off my desk in fear when I'm playing a game.
Very cool.
All right. Hey, Ken, we really appreciate you spending some time with us. We know scheduling's tight, so we do appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk to you after the game ships. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Great. Thanks again.
Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. Take it easy, man. Bye-bye.
That was Ken Levine of Irrational Games, co-developing System Shock 2. All right. Do we want to move on, or let's take a break? Because after the break, what's on the list here? Yes, we're going to give away a prize because you're going to. Actually, let's do the news next. Let's do The Wire.
Okay. Right.
Wait, total brain fart. We have to talk to the guy from Game Domain.
Oh, when's that happening?
That's happening next. So when we take a break.
Well, then you should probably mention this before you go to the break.
Oh yeah, Kingpin went gold, and Total Annihilation Kingdoms went gold.
Yeah, Total Annihilation Kingdoms. Look out. Gonna be the best.
It's gonna be good.
Oh yeah.
It's gonna be big.
It's gonna be big.
It's gonna be big. Oh yeah, and one
What's
last thing.
Box?
We understand that we got a very irate caller.
Yeah.
Who apparently decided not to hang around.
Yes, but we had a very irate caller commenting on my Bell Atlantic story, and he got confused that I was making fun of the people who were striking against Bell Atlantic, and that is not the case. I was just making the point that
they thought it was a amusing way of doing a commercial.
Right. They had a James Earl Jones imitator.
Right.
Who was doing the, you know, Bell Atlantic
Heart
voice.
Of telecommunications?
Or just plain heartless. This. That was the part that made me crack up. Not the fact that people are struggling to buy bread.
Right.
I would never laugh about something like that unless I had to. Let's take a break.
Jeff, Kevin, and Mike, Tech Radio.